This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Box on the Place to Be Nation Pop Network. We are your podcast source for deep cut discussions of genre films, whether it be action, horror, sci-fi, new or old. It's all still in good fun. I am Chris Jordan. You can find me online at retromovienerd.com, where this week I will have a review of Ken Russell's trippy, holy fuck trippy, Altered States. For 1980, this movie was quite the rip, man. But you can find the review for it online this coming week at RetroMovieNerd.com. Joining me, as always, my co-host, the man of the hour, the tower of power. He's too sweet to be sour. He's not superstar Billy Graham. He's the Ayatollah of pop cultura, Joel LaPuma.
Thank you, Chris. I do have a lot of work before I become superstar Billy Graham. But, I mean, I haven't even seen Altered States.
that is a trippy movie, dude.
I am really behind on my Ken Russell. Despite living a stone's throw from Queens, I apparently missed on October 30th and 31st. They had a pop-up McDonald's turned into a McDowell's.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I totally missed that. Like they had the Big Mick even.
The Big Mick. that sounds quite awesome. I don't know. Is it made with Guinness?
Oh, I don't know. I think it's pretty much the same as the Big Mac, but
maybe you can get a Guinness from the fountain.
Oh, they even had a Randy Jackson sexual chocolate shake.
I live in the wrong part of the country, dude.
You're missing out on all this Coming to America goodness.
What a country.
Randy Watson. American Idol Jackson.
Oh, man. Well, now I'm no longer interested.
You can't please everyone. Even with an amazing Coming to America restaurant in real life.
Well, that's cool to hear, Joel. I'm sorry you missed out on it.
I did. Halloween was good otherwise, though. I was dressed up as Eddie from It.
Oh yeah, you had the cast with the loser lover writing on it, right?
I did. Real arm cast. Had to cut myself out of that later that night.
You had to go slam your arm in the door a few times.
Well, I mean, I do that for fun anyway.
Oh, Joel. What are we gonna do with you, man? You're just a big old threat to society.
Oh, this podcast keeps me off the streets. You're doing your part.
Well, all right, I'm doing my part. I'm keeping the world safe by keeping you busy.
Just keep me answering trivia questions and talking about new releases.
We're gonna skip the trivia questions this week, Joel.
I know we've got a big week.
Yeah, we got a big week this week, and I'm looking forward to it. We're going to be talking to one of the founders of the Hudson Horror Show there in Poughkeepsie, Chris Allo. And so we're looking forward to it. This has been a long-awaited guest of my own, because I have so many questions I want to ask this guy about this show. So hopefully we can find out what we want to know.
Oh, absolutely. No, it should be great. For those who are unfamiliar with the Hudson Horror Show, we've mentioned it before on this show. It's a twice yearly horror film festival, all 35mm screenings in Poughkeepsie, New York. The next is December 16th, and we'll be talking with one of the founders, Chris Allo, about that in just a bit.
Yeah, awesome. I'm going to ask him about Death Spa, dude. I know I said that last week, but I'm going to ask him if maybe he'll acquire Death Spa, even though I won't be around to see it.
Is there even a print of that?
I haven't a clue, but, you know, it's just a big request I have. So maybe even though I don't have the opportunity to watch it, maybe he can grant that wish. I don't know.
Just a general life request? You just go into, like, a tax office and ask if they have Death Spa?
Right. I go around just asking people if they have, you know, VHS copies of Death Spa just laying around. And I think I'm in the wrong part of the country to find that movie also. You know, in Texas, they don't have too many copies of Death Spa around. I can't even find horror films in my thrift stores around here, man. Seriously.
Are there a lot of straight-to-video Christian films?
Yeah, there's a lot of... I can find plenty of copies of The Blind Side on DVD, though.
Oh, yeah, that's got to be like the national film of Texas, right?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about...
I was really hoping for, like, Thief in the Night or something like that. keep an eye out for me.
The Blind Side and Mark of the Beast.
Yeah.
Oh, and the Left Behind series.
No. I go legit. Old, grody, creepy, you know, end of the world films or nothing. No, like modern Kirk Cameron crap.
Kirk Cameron saves Christmas.
Every year he saves Christmas.
Let's talk about our new releases this week, Joel, coming out on Blu-ray / DVD. It's a small handful this week that we want to bring light to. And, of course, our good friends at Shout Factory are putting out a couple of, memorable action films from the 90s. We've got Darkman 2. The Return of Durant. Now, this went to direct-to-video back in 1995. Of course, Liam Neeson is no longer in the series at this point. He only did the first one. But we get Arnold Vosloo in return, the mummy himself, as Peyton Westlake. And, of course, the series creator, Sam Raimi, Ted Raimi's brother, is still on board on this. So this the tone of the original one still mostly intact in this, but I don't have too many fond memories of Darkman 2, although I am a fan of Darkman 1, and Darkman 2 and the next film we're going to talk about are probably on my collection list, just because of my fandom for the first one, just to have that complete collection. But yeah, Darkman 2, The Return of Durant, Larry Drake returns as Durant.
Yes.
Yes, he does. And it's kind of unexplained how he survived the helicopter crash at the end of the first one.
He's Larry Drake. He can do anything.
He's Larry Drake. He's Dr. Giggles. He surgically repaired himself, even though he was in a coma. you got any thoughts on Darkman 2, Joel?
You know, I've never seen the Darkman sequels. I know.
Yeah,
that's a huge failing of mine, huge personal failing. I'm still excited that we're now referring to Sam Raimi as Ted Raimi's brother.
Well, that's just for context purposes. Sam Raimi is he's quite the cult figure himself on his own terms. He's appeared in plenty of movies himself and in some some minor roles, but I guess if you're going to ride someone's coattails, it may as well be Ted Raimi's, right?
Wait, are you getting them mixed up?
Yeah.
Text the actor, Sam's the director.
I am getting them mixed up, my bad.
No, I thought you were doing that ironically. I was really excited.
You know, I wish I was doing it ironically now. Ah, man. You know what? Fuck it. Let's just keep going. let's talk about the other Shout Factory release. Darkman 3. Die, Darkman, die. And with this one came another one, you know, straight to video in 1996. This one was directed by Bradford May. Sam Raimi is still executive producer on this, so he's still overseeing the whole production. And once again, we've got Arnold Vosloo in the main role, and no Durant, no Larry Drake in this one. So this is probably the lesser of the three, Joel. But as mentioned earlier, you know, because of Darkman 1, big fan of that one. This will probably get a pass, and I'll probably be giving this one a look. Even though I haven't seen it, this is the one of the three that I have not seen at this point.
Yeah, I know, like, the main villain in this one is Jeff Fahey, the Lawnmower Man himself. And I believe these two were filmed simultaneously?
Yeah, that would make sense. Darkman 2 came out in 95, Darkman 3 came out in 96, so... I believe that is correct, without looking it up, but I believe you are correct.
Which makes sense. I mean, Darkman was a pretty successful movie. It's a bit of a surprise hit, I'm sure, but, you know, did well in theater. I'm sure did even better on video. So commissioning a couple of quick direct-to-video Darkman films and just getting them out there as quick as possible, I'm sure made a lot of sense.
Yeah, so... look for those out this week from Shout Factory, Darkman 2 and Darkman 3, for your collection purposes. Well, let's talk about, we got a couple from VCI Entertainment. The first one we want to look at, this one is kind of a cult film from 1977.
Yes.
It's Satan's Cheerleaders.
Satan's Cheerleaders. Yeah. I love this movie.
Directed by Graydon Clark. John Ireland's in it. John Carradine. We got another name in there, Yvonne DiCarlo. What do you make of this one, Joel? I haven't really seen Satan's Cheerleaders, but I know about it. But
I'm a big Satan's Cheerleaders fan. It's a ridiculous movie.
I was going to say, you sound like you've seen it.
Oh, many times. It's asinine. It's wonderful. I mean, the cheerleaders accosted by Satanists. One of them, over the course of it, gains satanic powers. Graydon Clark's wife is their coach, his real life wife. You know, it's a super low budget mix of satanic panic films with high school sex comedies. Basically, the two great genres of the 70s combined into one. And I believe this is an early Dean Cundey cinematographer job.
Yeah, yes it is. Cinematography by Dean Cundey. Very good.
So it looks much better than any film of this stripe has any right to. I mean, Graydon Clark is a fairly talented director. People might argue that based on his material, but for a low budget director, he's very good at making a film that looks better than it should. You know, so especially around this period where we're getting like Satan's Cheerleaders, Without Warning, like, you know, these are Black Shampoo. These are films that look much better than they have any right to.
Yeah, you'll see a lot of films from, you know, the 70s, mid to late 70s that just the production design or the cinematography, whatever, pretty doesn't hold up very well. But, you know, Dean Cundey, and this is why you always harp on Dean Cundey, but yeah, probably one of the best cinematographers in the game, and making a movie that looks good, that has no right to look good, but yeah, it is. It's probably something that I'm going to want to check out.
Oh yeah, no, I'm really excited to see how this is going to look on Blu-ray. Yeah, I've had DVD for a long time, but it's not the most quality DVD. It's a cheapie thrown out there just because it was a film that I'm sure cost nothing to license.
Right. Yeah. So Satan's Cheerleaders is Joel's Blu-ray pick of the week.
Yes, it is.
We've got another one here from VCI, and this one I've caught in bits and pieces on Roku on our B-Movie TV. They played it a while back. Great channel. If you have a Roku, look up B-Movie TV. If you're a fan of genre films, they've got a great selection of movies. They live stream 24/7. It's not anything on demand or anything, so you could walk in the middle of a movie and miss the title and not know what it is, and that's the one part that drives me nuts. They don't have a schedule anywhere, but they played The Aftermath from 1982 is the movie we're talking about, coming out on Blu-ray. Alternate title is Zombie Aftermath, although from my recollection there aren't that many zombies in it. 1982 science fiction horror type film. This one got busted under the Video Nasty Act in the UK, Joel.
Really?
Yes, it did.
This is also a fairly
any like obscenity really in it, but I guess maybe because of the title Zombie Aftermath, I guess they just lumped it in there. I'm not sure what the story is behind that, but. The gist of the film is basically just a group of astronauts returning to Earth after it's been blown to pieces in a nuclear holocaust. One of them dies in the crash landing. The two survivors, they encounter some mutants. LA's been completely destroyed. And just basically becomes a post-apocalyptic survival film. Sid Haig is in it. It's got the great Sid Haig in there. Steve Barkett was the writer, producer, director, and star, go figure. And so, yeah, it's one of those films that Sid Haig is a villain in this film, of course. He leads a gang of outlaw bikers. When does he not? And basically it comes down to, survivors versus outlaw bikers in a post-apocalyptic wasteland. So kind of sounds familiar with the Mad Max craziness of the early 80s, but The Aftermath itself, just one of those films that you probably will end up watching ironically, as we've been discussing before the show. It's not art by any means, and it probably will crack you up on certain things that you see it, and you'll be stuck wondering why this thing made the Video Nasty list.
Yeah, I'm curious about that myself. It might just be a case of timing coming out alongside a lot of other video nasties, and when in the era where the Daily Mail and Mary Whitehouse were just pointing at everything that came out as a potential corrupter of our precious youth. A couple interesting things about this, of course, Sid Haig in a major role, Forrest Ackerman himself, is in a minor role as the curator, it looks like. He's made films before, but I mean it's just kind of fascinating, the great magazine editor, movie memorabilia collector, one of the great figures in horror movie history is in this, which is interesting. And weirdly enough, in the main female role, we've got Lynn Margulies, who was Andy Kaufman's girlfriend.
Yeah, so you've got an interesting, eclectic is the word I'd use, cast.
Which kind of makes me want to see a remake of this with Courtney Love playing Lynn's character, like she played Lynn in Man on the Moon.
and we'll leave Sid Haig be Sid Haig.
Oh yeah, no, just
because we need to see Sid Haig in movies until he's no longer with us. The Aftermath I think is another solid pickup to check out, just because of the interest from being on the Video Nasty list and the Eclectic cast and the probably, since the parts of it I've seen, the unintentional comedy, as we call it, from The Aftermath from 1982. So check it out. I think we got a few others here, Joel, that you want to touch on.
Yeah, actually, this one is one I just found doing research. Kino's got a nice release this week of the 1967 spaghetti western Death Rides a Horse.
Oh, okay.
Starring Lee Van Cleef. It's not one I've seen, but it's Lee Van Cleef in a spaghetti western Kino Blu-ray. It's probably worth a look.
Yeah, you can't go wrong. It's a good combination.
Yeah. We've got a couple fairly decent anime releases this week. I know that's not like our main topic typically, but Funimation has a fairly expensive box set of Speed Racer. Unfortunately, it's only the American cuts of the shows. It's just, you know, if you grew up watching it on TV, it's just the cuts you're familiar with. But it is in a big case shaped like Speed Racer's head, if that's something where you really felt like your home was missing a bit of panache.
Really?
Yeah, you know, you need to, you know, if you ever wanted to invite someone over that you were trying to impress, potential boyfriend or girlfriend.
Let me put this Speed Racer set next to my copy of the Mona Lisa.
Yeah, they go together perfectly. And let me see. Bayview Entertainment also has a Blu-ray of one of the anime Revolutionary Girl Utena. This is from the Black Rose Saga collection, which I believe is the episodes 13 through 24 of the series, directed by one of the main directors of the Sailor Moon anime. If you're into magical girl anime and don't mind admitting that in public like I do, this is one of the all-time greats. If you're into manga and anime in any sort of fashion, it's probably one you'll hear about from fans at some point, just trying to proselytize their favorites. It's a pretty well regarded one, and it's definitely worth a look, both the comic and the show. This week, just a quick thing. This week is, of course, it's sort of that post Halloween doldrums. So you're a DVD collector, Blu-ray collector, you're looking at new stuff, what you're probably going to find right now is that so much of what's coming out are the big, like, repackages to, you know, bilk people out of money for Christmas.
Yeah, just the huge sets meant for, you know, Christmas gifts and whatnot.
I mean, we've got, you know, multiple Harry Potter sets, including, you know, 4K releases of all the films. There's a Godfather collection. DC's got a huge box set of like every direct-to-video animated film they've done in 10 years. It's literally 30 movies large.
Yeah, I think that one's going to be a popular one, actually.
Oh, I mean, you know, it's expensive, but for what you're actually getting out of it, it seems like a fairly high value release. I mean, I haven't seen most of those movies, but
the animated films get better reviews from fans and critics alike in comparison to the DC live action stuff that's come out over the last few years. Wonder Woman excluded, of course, but you know what I'm driving at. These are very popular films, and they're very good quality animated films as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's good voice acting. You know, some of them have Kevin Conroy return as Batman, Mark Hamill returns the Joker, and you know, it's not something where, unless you're like hardcore into DC, I would suggest. But it is a collection with a lot of diversity of tone. I mean, if you like sort of your more somber Batman, there's animated adaptations of Dark Knight Returns and Year One and Killing Joke, although the Killing Joke one has a lot of issues. You know, if you like more lighthearted DC, they've got an adaptation of Darwin Cook's New Frontier, which is, you know, one of the best comics they've done in 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different DC here. So if you're into, if you're just a big superhero fan and you have no idea what to get this Christmas, but someone's willing to spend a lot of money on you, this seems like a good option.
Absolutely. All right, so it is now time for the segment of the show that we've been waiting for, Joel. We have Chris Allo from the Hudson Horror Show on the line with us. Chris, how you doing, man?
Pretty good, Chris. How you guys doing out there?
We're doing awesome. We've been talking this up for some time, and we're glad to finally have you on the show, man. And got some questions for you, and I know your game, and we really appreciate your time here on the show.
No problem. Thanks so much for having me on. It's always it's always good to talk about the show and help spread the word. So yeah, thanks so much.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a our Place to Be Nation website crew and everything. We got a lot of guys up in the Northeast there that will probably, you know, they're in the vicinity, and so maybe they'll be able to check out the show, and we'll hope to get the word out and get you some more.
Awesome.
Get you some more fans, man.
That's great, Dan. That's great. We love that.
All right. Well, first things first, then, Chris. Let me ask you. How long has the Hudson Horror Show been going on exactly?
This is the end of our eighth year. We do two big all-day festival kind of shows a year, and this is our 16th all-day show. So yeah, this is the end of our eighth year.
Awesome. That's quite a run that you've got there, man. So this is, and I assume, is this something that you've noticed word getting around more? Are you like drawing in more people every year with these shows?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, at one point, we were doing only one theater, and the show kept selling out so much that we had to take over two rooms at the theater we run at, just to accommodate, because I personally felt very I hate anybody that gets disappointed, you know, with the show. So we made the decision to expand it that way. The overflow, we wouldn't be turning away people, because that really bothered me. You know, people were getting disappointed that they couldn't get tickets because the show was so selling out so fast. So now we do it in two rooms the same day. And it's just run as two separate shows. It's the same exact. You get the same exact movies, just in a different order. So it doesn't really matter which room you sit in. You're still going to see everything the same. And So that was a couple of years ago we expanded.
Yeah, very cool, very cool. Let me ask you, so how did it really get started?
Long story short, I was the kid. I was one of the first guys when I was a kid to get a VCR. And then I was really one of the first guys out of all my friends to get two VCRs. So I was the guy that was copying movies, and then I started tape trading with people all over, and I would always have groups of people over my house to watch, you know, weird and obscure cult films. And then years later, I went to some screenings, some 35mm screenings of run by the guys who were totally awesome in Philadelphia, Exhumed Films, and it was a life-changing event. I was like, oh my god, this is the greatest thing I've ever attended. So we did a bunch of them, and my wife was like, you know, you have so much fun at these shows, but you're always like, you know, I wish they showed this movie, or I wish they showed that movie. She's like, you know a lot of people, why don't you try and do your own show? And I was like, wow, that sounds crazy. But I had a friend, Ted Leger, who worked for Grindhouse Releasing. So we contacted them. They were awesome. They helped us with a bunch of their prints. We figured we would do one show and never do it again. And now we're doing our 16th all-day festival, and we've done a bunch of other shows at the Alamo Draft House and double features. So I'm not even sure how many movies we've actually shown at this point.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, So, I mean, you had some connections, of course, to help you out with this, it sounds like. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we could not have couldn't have done it without Grindhouse Releasing.
Yeah, and so I guess for someone who is interested in starting something like this, I mean, I imagine if without those connections, the process would probably be extremely it would be very difficult, I imagine.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I can only imagine it's even more difficult today than when we started because, you know, when we started, we advertised from day one, hey, all movies are off 35mm film. Well, you know, 8-9 years ago when we were preparing for our first show, every theater pretty much still had 35mm film projectors.
Yeah.
You know, 8-9 years later, most of them are gone.
Yeah. Yeah, there aren't too many 35mm theaters left, and unfortunately.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, you can show stuff digitally, you know, DVD or Blu-ray or through DCP projection, but I'm a nostalgia guy.
Uh-huh.
You know, I collect old toys and comic book and old movie posters. I like old stuff, so that's what attracted me to showing movies off film because it's the way that they were presented, you know, 20, 30, you know, 40 years ago, whatever it may be.
And see, I find it interesting that, like you said, it has changed in 8-9 years that so many theaters have transitioned to just digital. I find it interesting that, like, the venues for these kinds of things have changed along with it because so many screenings of 35mm are now in sort of archive settings. Like, I think of the Eastman House in Rochester just... you know, things attached to MoMA in New York, just typically theaters attached to museums. And that's obviously, like, extremely wrong for this kind of festival.
It's true. Well, you know what it was, you know, a few years ago when all the studios wanted all the theaters to change over, they all had programs where the studios would reimburse the theater. They would say, okay, you know, you're going to switch to digital. It's going to cost you X amount of dollars to switch, but we, as the studios, we're going to reimburse you and give you X amount of money, but with the stipulation that you have to not dismantle, destroy your 35mm film projectors.
Wow.
So that's why there are so few theaters left that have it. And, yeah, of course, you know, art house theaters and, you know, places like that, you know, they obviously, I guess, refused to switch over, and maybe they had public funding in some of their cases. But that's why there are so few theaters left that that have them.
Yeah, wow. So, I mean, just totally destroy 35mm.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. That's a shame.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've heard stories from, you know, from film engineers of them just, you know, knocking over projectors and literally throwing them over balconies and, you know, because those things are really heavy. And but, yeah, that was the thing. The studios did not want theaters to keep 35mm projectors.
Wow.
They wanted everything to go digital because it's cheaper for them to, you know, to ship a little hard drive containing the film. They can control it better if it's all digital. And yeah, I guess, you know, you could use the argument of, oh, it looks better, but, you know, I don't know, that's a whole different ball of wax. But yeah, it's just unfortunate there's very few venues out there that still have 35mm projectors.
Yeah, and of course I'm a nostalgic guy like yourself, Chris, and I'm still collecting VHS and
see, there you go.
Yeah, so I mean, seeing, just hearing the stories about, you know, the 35mm projections, it just, you know, brings a tear to my eye, honestly.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
It's a lost art for sure.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you then, how difficult is it to let me go back a little bit. When you're determining the lineup for your big shows, are you determining them based on what you want to see, or are you basing it on what's available on 35 millimeter?
It's pretty much 50-50. Because yeah, they're most of the studios no longer have 35 millimeter prints anymore, so we have to pretty much rely on private collectors.
Oh, okay.
for what's out there. So it's pretty much, you know, what I think the audience wants to see, but also what's available. I mean, there's plenty of things that the audience I'm sure would love to watch, but you know, there's just no prints out there.
So let me ask you a follow up to that then. As many number of shows have you had? Have you had any, I guess, repeats, movies that you've shown more than once?
We have not. We have in the 8 years, we have not repeated a single movie yet. We have had a lot of requests for certain movies we ran at earlier shows. At this point, we'd like to hold off until we hit the 10-year mark without repeating anything.
Awesome. Yeah. So that's pretty good. And this is a question I told you I was going to pose you. Have you ever had a copy of Death Spa?
No. And I know they ran that at the Alamo Draft House.
Did they?
I want to say last year at their Dismember the Alamo show. I've never actually seen Death Spa. I always wanted to. I know it just came out on Blu-ray not that long ago. I've heard mixed things. I've heard people tell me it's hysterical, and I had a buddy who saw it at the Alamo last year, and he wanted to throw himself in front of a car. He hated it. So
yeah,
I haven't seen it myself.
That pretty much about sums up my feelings on it. It's horribly hysterical. So,
okay. All right. I will certainly put it on my list to check out.
Well, I guess that leads into a question I had is when you're building a lineup, like how do you sort of modulate different tones in film, like in order to ensure that you don't have too many films that are really similar, too many films that have a similar feel, that you have enough diversity like to make a lineup that doesn't tire an audience out, I guess.
Yeah, that makes sense, Joel. I mean, early on, we sort of by accident stumbled onto that just diversity. You know, we were just coming up with the lineups based upon, again, what we wanted to show and what we could get a hold of. And, you know, we started hearing feedback from audience members. They were like, yeah, you know, we really like that it's a diverse lineup. You know, you'll get a slasher movie and a monster movie and an exploitation movie, you know, all on the same show. Whereas other people were doing shows where, and not to knock anybody else's shows, but other people were doing shows where it was all zombie movies in one night, or all, you know, exploitation movies in one night, or all Italian horror movies in one night. And, you know, that's great, but we like to mix it up, and, you know, it just that sort of became our game plan of, oh, okay, well, we've been showing diverse lineups. Let's keep that going. Because we're you know, the ultimate goal is we're always thinking, well, if you don't like this movie, hopefully you'll like the one after.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Just the diverse lineup, excuse me. I mean, this year's lineup. So we'll run down this year's lineup. You've got Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers, and then Blackula. You got your 70s blaxploitation horror film, Savage Streets, pure exploitation.
Totally.
The Boogans, man.
Right, the terrible rubber monster movie,
so,
The Boogans.
Yeah, I mean, did you have to blow the dust off The Boogans? Seriously, that's an awesome find for you, dude.
Right, that one, and then we have Prison, the haunted house movie.
Yeah,
and the mystery movie.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's a pretty a fairly diverse lineup. You know, we've had some issues with this show going into it, just because some behind the scenes stuff with the theater. You know, we don't know going forward. We're not, you know, I guess the future for us is a little bit questionable. So this was the best lineup that we could sort of put together for this show. But The Boogans is one of those movies that I always hated, actually. I saw it on VHS when I was a kid. I thought it was terrible. I saw it on TV on the greatest television channel in the history of television, Monsters HD, and I thought it was terrible. And then I saw The Boogans a couple of years ago at a film festival, and I was like, wow, I'm like seeing it projected on the big screen. I was like, this movie's a lot of fun. So I thought that was a good one to revisit for our show.
Awesome. Yeah. And, well, let me ask you just a little bit more. You've got other stuff going on, alongside your great lineup of movies, but you've got, you show, movie trailers, right?
Yep. We get my buddy Sean is a big trailer collector, and he is just rapidly, you know, scouring the internet and eBay for you know, classic 35mm film trailers. And I love trailers. It's actually my favorite part of my show or anybody's shows. You know, to watch the trailers. I just love that stuff. So yeah, we try and pack in as many as we can.
Right, and that's pretty cool. And then, of course, out in the lobby, you've got your vendors. Who are your vendors this year? I mean, for this show.
Gosh, we have about 16 or 17 vendors. Off the top of my head, I mean, the main one is probably Vinegar Syndrome, who they're an awesome DVD Blu-ray company, and they have restore all sorts of horror and cult films and remaster them for Blu-ray. We have people with t-shirts and action figures and posters and all sorts of almost kind of like, you know, Etsy kind of arts and craft kind of horror keychains and buttons and just all sorts of stuff. And we always say too, if someone wants to come to the show just to shop, they don't need a ticket to shop the vendors. We are totally fine with people just coming, you know, visiting the vendors and doing their shopping and then going home. I mean, I know it's a lot to ask people to come and sit, you know, for 12 hours in a movie theater. You know, some people have kids, they can't get away, you know, whatever the case is. So, you know, we like to look at it as like, oh, it's like a free convention. You know, if you want to just come and check out the vendors, that's totally cool with us.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. And, Joel and I, we have a section on the podcast where we run down the week's new retro releases. And so we're
cool.
We're always talking up Vinegar Syndrome and Severin and companies like that because there's
– Oh, yeah. Those guys are all really doing – they're really doing God work by restoring some of these movies that, quite honestly, they should – some of them should probably remain lost because it's terrible.
Yeah.
But it's really, you know, it's amazing the stuff that is available now thanks to all these awesome companies.
All right, awesome. Okay, so stay on the line with us just for a minute, Chris. We're gonna take
a
break, and when we come back on the other side, we're gonna talk about we're gonna get specifically into the movies you're gonna be showing here, and.
Okay, good.
And then we'll continue plugging away on your show.
That's good. Awesome. Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Welcome to the jungle! promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Clotheslines and Headlines, Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. And we leave wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the Our Vantage Point podcast, which features a potpourri-style look at wrestling history, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and the Imaginary Stories. You can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows plus others available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, thehistoryofwrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes or on Android with your favorite podcast app. Established in 2013, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network is committed to providing unique takes on the rich and diverse medium of professional wrestling, focusing on its history and global impact, but also exploring the vibrant contemporary scene. The roll call includes Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast, This Week in Wrestling, Stacy and Elliott's Bogus Journey, the Super Apoitas podcast, the Military Industrial Suplex, Strong Style History, Puro Puri, and Psychology is Dead. Also, from the archives, the full catalog of great shows that provided a fresh look at classic wrestling, including Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, Letters from Kayfabe, Wrestling Culture, Pro Wrestling Super Show, Goodwill Wrestling, and many, many others. Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Only the best.
My friends feel it's their appointed duty. They keep trying to tell me all you want to do is use me. But my answer, they know all that use me stuff. I want to spread the news that if it feels it's good getting used, oh, you just keep on using me till you use me up.
Welcome back. We're talking to Chris Allo from the Hudson Horror Show. Chris, the date of the show, Saturday, December 16th. And
yep,
where's it going to be at?
It is at the Empire South Hills Cinema 8 in beautiful Poughkeepsie, New York. And I believe this, the first movie kicks off right around noon. And it's around a 12-hour show because it is six full movies. Pay one ticket and get to see all six movies.
Awesome. Okay. And then you've got a website dedicated to the show, right?
Yep. www.hudsonhorror or hudsonhorrorshow.com. Either one, and that's where you can buy advance tickets, which are $38, and that one ticket is all you need to watch all the movies.
Awesome. Okay. Well, let's actually talk about the movies. Let's get our quick thoughts on each film on the list here, and of course, we'll kick it off with the headliner, of course, which is Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers.
Okay.
Yeah. So. What do you actually think of this movie, Chris?
I always liked it. I mean, I was a growing up, I was a huge fan of slasher films, and man, I was so excited to see this in the theater in '88 when it came out, and I remember really liking it. I've seen it a bunch of times since on DVD and Blu-ray, and I think it really holds up. I think. Some of the hairstyles are pretty bad, but I think Danielle Harris is awesome in it, and it's great to have Donald Pleasance back, and I think it's a really solid movie. I think it really holds up as far as the slasher sequels, certainly as far as the Halloween series is. I would put it behind 1 and 2. I love 3, but it's kind of, I always look at it as its own sort of thing.
Yeah, as a standalone. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you?
Yeah, and I think after Halloween 4, I think the Halloween sequels really kind of took a nosedive.
I totally agree with that. That brings me to a couple of questions. You say you saw it in a theater in '88. I mean, when it was coming out, when it was about to come out, were you one of the fans who was disappointed in Halloween 3 at that point? At that point, were you what was the general response that you saw to there's a new Halloween and Michael Myers is back in it?
Oh, the excitement was unprecedented. I mean, I was the Fangoria kid, and I started even earlier with Famous Monsters when I was little. All my friends, we were all so excited that Michael Myers would be back in a Halloween movie with Donald Pleasance. And yeah, as a kid, I hated Halloween 3. I just thought it was so stupid. Just so ridiculous to do a Halloween movie without Michael Myers. And yeah, I've definitely, reversed my thinking, since then. Now I really enjoy Halloween 3, but it is still so completely ridiculous.
It is. Yeah, I was going to say, it's just amazing how many people have come around on Halloween 3 just in the last few years alone,
Yeah,
it's just become like its own kind of like, a separate from the franchise itself, its own standalone cult film.
Totally. I mean, to me, it's like it's a fun, schlocky, sci-fi slash horror film, and I always just scratch my head going, all right, wait a second. If you can build robot Terminators that look like humans, like, why are you even bothering with these rubber masks that can kill kids and turn into snakes? That's how you take over the world with the Terminators. Forget the freaking snake masks. That's stupid. But yeah, I love, I've definitely changed my view. Although, my theory is, and I'd like to know what you guys think, but my theory is, okay, people eventually came to love Halloween 3 and appreciate Halloween 3 because eventually we did get Michael Myers, and there's been a ton of Michael Myers movies since then. My theory is, if they never would have done Michael Myers movies again and Halloween just ended with Halloween 3, people would still hate it.
Oh, I definitely agree with that. Even as a kid, like, I was one of the people who came around on Halloween 3 as a kid. I was like, what the hell is this? Why are you doing this? Even, like, no, being, I mean, we're talking like far after Michael Myers came back. I think at the point I saw Halloween 3, it was maybe 2 years before H2O came out. So, like, you know, Michael Myers was such an established fact at that point. Even then, like, as a kid, you know, that still upset me. I mean, I think part of the, aside from, you know, the fact that people can just look at it as a weird outlier, the fact that Michael Myers came back, I almost think that, like, a lot of the positive reception that for Halloween 3, people turning around on it, is because Night of the Creeps became such a cult classic, and anything with Tom Atkins sort of gained higher esteem of horror fans.
That could be, too. That definitely could be. I mean, I love Night of the Creeps. We tried to show that a couple of years ago. That was one that we had to get from the studio, and that was one, unfortunately for us, the theater that we run our shows out of, it's a platter system versus a reel-to-reel system, and platter systems are a little tougher on film prints. And yeah, the studio would not let us run, would not let us borrow their print, just because they wanted to keep it, understandably so, in as pristine condition as possible. But yeah, I could definitely see that. I mean, Night of the Creeps really is such a great film, and it is one of those movies that I think almost gets better with age.
Oh, easily, definitely.
Well, let's talk about Blackula. This is one of this is one of my wife's favorite movies, and she loves the Blackula series.
Oh.
And
that's awesome.
Yeah, this is
your wife definitely has awesome taste.
Oh, she
then.
Does definitely, and she didn't get any of it from me. So, but I think yeah, this is kind of a cool also. I mean, Blackula's blaxploitation classic, and I like Scream Blackula, Scream a little better than the original Blackula. But still, they're both very.
Do ya?
Yeah, I think they're still both very fine films, and I think this is good for people who aren't familiar with the mashup of the blaxploitation and horror genre. I think this is a good entry point for them.
Oh yeah, I mean it's a great movie to me. I mean, I grew up, I was born in 71, so I remember watching Blackula on TV when I was like in probably like 76. So I was like 5 years old, and I was just terrified. I mean, I thought William Marshall was so frightening of a vampire, you know, with the fangs and the hair on his face, and just I remember him like running down the street, and it was modern times, you know. I mean, I love Christopher Lee and Bela Lugosi, but most of those movies, you know, took place, quote unquote, in the old country in Europe somewhere. You know, this was modern day, and you know, the vampires essentially running down the street after people. It just, to me, it was so scary as a kid, and I've just always loved this movie. And now I look at it completely different. Like, wow, I was like, it's almost kind of like the superhero kind of story, because he's, you know, when he's Prince. When he's the you know, the debonair, suave Prince Mamawaldi, he's like a nice guy, and then he turns into Blackula, the savage vampire. But it's really kind of a love story too. So I like it even more now as an adult. But I do see it, you know, quite differently from when I was a kid. And it's funny, you know. There's a lot of funny lines. There's you know, quite a few lines in it that are politically incorrect. As far as today, yeah. But I enjoy it, so hopefully the audience will like it.
Yeah, and the thing I wanted to add, you mentioned superhero, but at this point in this era, during the early 70s, you got horror-themed comics that are quite popular. And so this is actually seems like a kind of like a pulpy kind of story that you would find in those horror comics, you know, back in the early 70s.
Oh, totally. Yeah, it's very, very much like a you could easily see it as a comic book. In fact, I had recently I had no idea that they did make a not a straight comic adaption, but there was a comic adaption of Blackula in the 70s.
Oh, wow. Okay, I didn't know that.
That Yeah, Marvel did it. It was they had a magazine called Bleck, and it was like Mad Magazine, and then Marvel had Crazy Magazine, which was, you know, a spoof of Mad, and then they had this comic imprint called Bleck, and it was like Mad, where they would spoof a movie, and they spoofed Blackula, and I had no idea it existed until recently. I picked it up off eBay.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It's funny seeing Marvel do that, because that's the company that gave us Blade and Tomb of Dracula in the 70s.
Right, yes. Yeah, that's true. So, it's crazy connections there.
Here's one that that I'm a fan of, Savage Streets, and this is this is straight up exploitation. I mean, Linda Blair versus street punks. I mean, you can't go wrong with that.
Oh, totally. I mean, I'm a big Linda Blair fan. I mean, I love The Exorcist. I mean, I love the so many of the schlocky exploitation movies that she made in the late 70s and early 80s. Like Roller Boogie and Hell Night and Chain Heat. I love all that stuff. So, Savage Streets to me is just one of my favorites. It's Linda Blair replaces Charles Bronson, but she's in tighter leather and, she shows her boobs. I mean, it's ridiculous.
That really was what was missing from Charles Bronson's movies.
He oh, totally.
His boobs enough.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a fun schlocky movie. I have the autographed poster at my house that I had her and a couple of other people sign. I'm just a big Linda Blair fan, and so I was really glad we were able to show this one.
Yeah, and I was recently telling Joel that one of the things that I've recently become a fan of when going back into movies from the 80s, specifically action movies, I'm a big fan of the whole city, nighttime city aesthetic, you know what I mean? You know how it was depicted in the 80s, where like New York was this big garbage trash heap,
you know? Right.
and I'm just suddenly become a fan of rogue cop driving down the street at night in his souped-up car while, all the neon flashing behind him and all that stuff. Just that whole aesthetic, man. I've been trying to seek that out in my movies. And, Savage Streets kind of has some of that, a lot of, nighttime scenes and things like
right.
that. Yeah, and that's what I want out of, my 80s exploitation action films is just more garbage in alleyways and stuff like that.
That's awesome. That, yeah, no, it's definitely has its share moments in for sure.
Now, this leads me to a couple of questions about film selection. Of course, Savage Streets is not even like a mashup like Blackula is. It's just a straight up revenge film. And, for a good long time now, you've done usually at least one non-horror film on the lineup. So have you encountered any resistance to that? Personally, I'm a big fan of having that dip into here's something of a related tone, related genre, but it's not it's not a straight up horror film. I mean, how have people responded to those films? Have there been any in particular that people really loved or really not loved?
Let me think. For the most part, I think most of our fans seem to like when we do a non-horror movie for each fest. I mean, I know sometimes we've done more than one, but I think the reaction overall has been great from the people that matter, meaning the people that buy a ticket and come to the show. I can't tell you, though, how many times we'll post the lineup and people who don't come to the show and don't buy a ticket are like, wait, you're showing RoboCop? That's not a horror movie. And it's just a head scratcher. It's like, really?
Yeah.
Like, it just makes me throw my hands up in the air going, it's a great movie. It doesn't matter that it's a not a horror movie. There's probably more blood and guts in RoboCop than quite a few Halloween, Friday the 13th, and Leatherface sequels. But, you know, that was the only thing, you know, Hudson Horror Show, the horror part, that was not my, I didn't come up with that name. That was, my buddy Ted Leger. He came up with the name. We went with it, but that was the only thing that I was a little, hesitant about was the term horror, because I was always worried that people would be like, oh, well, Savage Streets isn't a horror movie, so why are you guys showing it? But most of the people, Joel, and I guess you could, you know, you've been to all the shows, you could probably agree that, yeah, most of the audience seems to really like it.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think one of my favorite Hudson Horror moments ever, and you know, a spate of them, was when you guys played after I annoyed you for so long about Switchblade Sisters, and during the bathroom brawl scene, I heard someone a few seats down from me in the same row say, "This is the greatest thing I've ever seen."
That's awesome. But I tell you, I was a little nervous with picking some of these quote unquote exploitation movies at first, but they all always seem to go over well. So we kind of figured we'd, you know, keep it going, and I like it. Again, it mixes the show up.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely agree. Another question I had: Savage Streets, and of course, trigger warning for some of our viewers. I mean, this does have a pretty intense and vicious rape sequence. And you've done other rape revenge films. I Spit on Your Grave, Miss 45, and horror films that are definitely in the more extreme category. Something like Cannibal Holocaust, or more ridiculously, Cannibal Ferox. Like, have you seen any like? You know, for me, like, I think I Spit on Your Grave, even though I don't mind it, was one of the only films, like, at one of the shows, I brought my friends to dinner because I had a group of, like, three girls with me. I really did not want to make them sit through that. But,
right.
But I did make them sit through Miss 45 because I think there's, like, I mean, didn't make them sit through it, but, you know, I did stay for that because I love that movie. I think there's real, like, value and substance to it. I mean, has there been any resistance to, like, those kinds of extreme films? I mean, obviously you guys aren't out there playing, like, August Underground or, you know, Mermaid and Manhole or anything, but...
No, I mean, the audience has really been pretty good and pretty accepting of what we show. I mean, we do always like to, you know, to warn people, you know, what they're about to see if they're unaware of it. It's just one of those staples. Like, listen, if it's a revenge movie, the hero, either their family is going to get, if it's a woman, they're getting raped. And if it's a man, like in the Death Wish movies or a million other movies, they're getting murdered. That's the way it goes. Just like, kind of like with women in prison movies. Okay, you know, there's going to be shower scenes. There's going to be the tough lesbian, and there's going to be the warden that's pressuring the ladies for sex. I mean, they're sort of the trappings of the genre. You just kind of almost have to expect it. But yeah, the audience has been pretty good. We do like to warn them. Like, I know for, you know, when we ran I Spit on Your Grave, which, you know, I think is a very powerful movie, you know, we were just like, hey, listen, this is not an easy movie to sit through. I can't think of another, you know, movie with more rapes than this movie. So, you know, be forewarned, if you're sitting through it, this is not an easy movie to take.
Yeah, I mean... It really is, like, I mean, of course, being a horror show crowd, it's a genre savvy audience, so I can't imagine there's a lot of contention or a lot of resistance to those kinds of films. But
right.
I'm always curious how people are going to respond. I mean, it blows my mind that things like I Spit on Your Grave were like drive-in staples at one point.
Oh yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I remember. I don't know if it was 1979 or 1980, but I remember seeing a really big ad for I Spit on Your Grave in the New York Daily News. you know, and had all the theaters. It was playing, you know, being a movie kid back then, you know, I mean, other than Fangoria, you know, you could only see so many movies. And so I would, you know, devour the newspaper for to look at the ads to see what movies were actually coming out. And yeah, I Spit on Your Grave got a really big release. I mean, it's crazy because the New York Daily News, write all newspapers. They don't even run movie, movie ads anymore. But back then, you know, Zombie and there's a few that I definitely remember, like Zombie, Screamers, and yeah, I Spit on Your Grave. You know, I remember it had like, I don't know, maybe like an eighth of a page in, eighth of a page or bigger in the Daily News, which prints how many millions of copies.
Yeah. Well, actually, that brings me to another question quick. I mean, right now, like, it seems like one of the biggest genres in theater, again, in terms of modern films is horror, that you have companies like Blumhouse doing extremely popular horror releases. We just had It become the highest grossing horror film of all time. I mean, these are all, like, of course, mid-budget films that are almost sort of counter-programming to the constant blockbusters now. But are you seeing a lot of, and of course, there's a lot of horror on television now that people are really following. Are you seeing a lot of, like, in terms of the audience for your shows, or even the audience in other shows you go to or other conventions, are you seeing a lot of sort of an influx of newer people, like people that are, it's a fairly sort of interconnected fan base, so like,
right,
you know, if we go, like, I go to these festivals, and you know, I met you, I met a lot of other people who have blogs, people who run other shows, so you start to get to know the people at these festivals. Are you seeing a lot of, like, new faces, like, because of this influx of, like, this sort of new era of horror, or is it still kind of a interconnected thing?
Yeah, I don't know, Joel, that's a really good question. I'm not sure. I mean, there's always a certain percentage and of the audience that comes and goes. You know, thankfully we have people like you who are, you know, you're the guys that we do this show for. You know, the people that come to all our shows. But yeah, there's a certain percentage of people that you know, sort of fade in and out or come to only certain shows. So I'm not sure if we're picking up any new fans who, because they're, you know, attracted now to newer horror films. But I think it's great that horror movies are, doing so well again. To me, it reminds me so much of the 80s. You know, these studios are making, they're smart in that they're making, you know, low-budget horror movies, and they're turning out big profits. I mean, to me, it's a no-brainer. So I hope it continues.
Yeah, and great questions there, Joel. But let's take a look at the next movie on the list here, Prison. Now I've got I've got a multi Blu-ray set here from Empire Pictures, which I bought from Full Moon's website. And Prison is included in that, and so I've seen Prison, and it's a hell of a movie for sure, and with an early career appearance by Viggo Mortensen. This movie is kind of and it's kind of gathered like a cult following over the years, and I think this is another boon for the festival as well, Chris. I think this is a good pickup.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, we this one was one sort of this one and Prison and Boogans and Savage Streets. To me, those are more of the lesser known movies,
yeah,
that we're sort of spotlighting at this festival. This version of the show, which I like. You know, it's great to be able to show something that not everybody may have seen previously. But yeah, to me, Prison's, it's like a haunted house movie, but it's like a haunted house movie mashed with a prison movie.
Yeah.
But it's pretty good. I kind of like it, and I had never seen it until not that long ago. And then when I saw it, and you know, prints of this are pretty scarce, sort of like Savage Streets as well. So both of those don't get a lot of play. Same thing with the Boogans. Boogans doesn't get a lot of play out there either. So, you know, when I was picking the movies, I was like, okay, you know, I kind of like, you know, going with some movies that have not already played at a million other venues recently. But, yeah, I think Prison's a fun one. I mean, yeah, that's one of Rennie Harlan's first movie, right?
Yeah.
And didn't he get the Nightmare on Elm Street 4 because of Prison, if I remember right?
Yeah, I think
that's correct. Because Prison was a year before that probably would have been the case.
Yeah, definitely. An early Rennie Harlan, early Viggo Mortensen, you know, way before Lord of the Rings, where he got most of his notoriety from. So I mean, that might if people look up Prison, they might be a little curious. Oh, Viggo Mortensen. Okay, I didn't realize he went that far back. I'm gonna have to check that one out. So I mean,
Interesting that, like, even after a fairly high-profile Scream Factory Blu-ray, like, Prison still seems a bit underseen considering all the people in it. I mean, you know, well-known cast, Kane Hodder's here, Tiny Lister's here, like, of course you got Rennie Harlan. A couple of questions about this one, Chris. Have you seen this on 35mm yet?
I have not, so I'm looking forward to that because, you know, my the selfish side of me, I always like to see something. I always like to book something that I have not yet seen myself off 35mm. So I'm very much curious to see how this looks projected on the big screen.
No, that totally makes sense. I guess my curiosity about this one is, are we going to be able to survive Viggo Mortensen's cheekbones on 35mm?
That's funny. We'll see if we can live to tell the tale.
And his very Jailhouse Rock Elvis James Dean pompadour thing he's got going on.
Oh, right. Yeah, no, that's true. That is true.
It's going to be great. Now, of course, you talked about, like, highlighting lesser known films, which is one of my favorite things about Hudson Horror. And of course, you know, when I started going to your shows, for me, the initial attraction was seeing all-time favorites that I had never seen on the big screen because, you know, I'm fairly young, at least too young to have seen, like, too young for the drive-in era, too young for the sort of repertory, like, you know, film, sort of traveling film print era. So seeing things like Halloween and Friday the 13th was a huge, huge draw. But, you know, the more experienced I am, like, the with screenings, like, the bigger draw now for me is seeing these obscurities, films that, like, yeah, I've seen Prison, I've seen The Boogans, I've seen Savage Streets, I love all of them, but being able to see them, like, on the big screen is something I never thought I'd have the opportunity to because of the scarcity of the prints, because of the obscurity of the film. Are there any films that you've that, like, were the most gratifying to introduce an audience to?
Let me think about the most gratifying. Yeah, I'm not sure. That's you know, I one that I think comes to mind is a few years ago we played Rolling Thunder.
Yes.
And that had not been seen by a lot of people, and I think it's just a great revenge movie. You know, just a fantastic cast, great acting. It's certainly a slow burn, but you know, so many people had not seen that, and then when it ended and people were coming out of the audience, they were just like, you know, coming out of the theater, they were like, oh my God, that movie was amazing. So I think that's one of, to me, probably one of the most satisfying movies that we've ran over the years.
And I was one of the people who, that was actually a big favorite of mine. I remember when you and I, because that was, I think, show four, the show headlined by Texas Chainsaw and Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember the previous show when you guys announced the next show. I was like the one who, as soon as you said Rolling Thunder, I was cheering, and everyone was like, "Huh, That's interesting. But yeah, that was the film I bought a Blu-ray player for.
Oh, no kidding.
When Shout announced they were releasing it just on Blu-ray, I was just like, it's time to finally, choice of words here, pull the trigger. But that's the kind of thing that, like, I come to Hudson Horror for, that, like, something like that, like, what I think is a truly great and overlooked film, like, finally gets, like, some kind of recognition because of you guys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, such a great movie. It's always nice to, surprise the audience with, a movie that's not that familiar with.
Yeah, and let me ask you a question, Chris. Do you sit in with the audience and gauge their reaction to each movie? Is that something you do?
I wish I could, but it's a for myself personally, it's a completely crazy, chaotic day because we're running two theaters at the same time, and then in between the two theaters, there's 20 vendors. So somebody is always grabbing me for attention, or something needs to be looked at, or I have to answer a question about something. I used to, earlier on when we did just one theater and the crowds were smaller, I used to be able to sit and watch one or two movies. But now I'm lucky if I can, come in one of the rooms just for a few minutes.
Oh, okay.
I do usually try and come in for the trailers at least, just to kind of gauge reaction. And absolutely, sometimes we have shown a trailer and the audience has gone berserk, and I'm like, okay,
you have to try and find that movie.
I'm still looking for, although it's a terrible movie, the audience went nuts when we showed the trailer for He-Man and the Masters of the Universe movie.
Yes.
The Dolph Lundgren movie, which is really just terrible, but I would love to show it just to see, okay, how is this going to go over?
I think that'll tear the house down, man.
Yeah.
I think Frank Langella at the end is gonna absolve any sin that movie ever made.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so that's a could be for a future.
Right, and of course, we talked about The Boogans earlier and how you didn't really like it the first few times you saw it, but 35mm, and you're a true believer in The Boogans.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it was just something about seeing it, up on the screen, and, it really is pretty gory, and, it just worked, which to me is proof positive of why, The Boogans wasn't made to be shown on television. The Boogans was made to be seen in a theater. So to me, it just it's proof of, you can't really judge these movies until you see it on the big screen. Other ones too that I recently in the last couple of years saw at other festivals, George Romero's Martin. I always thought there was something wrong with me because everybody always loved that movie, and I hated it. I can't tell you how many times I saw it, on VHS, and I wanted to love it, and I always hated it. I just thought it was boring, and then I saw it projected on the big screen. I was like, well, this movie's awesome. I'm like, this movie's great. So it definitely can change your perspective on a film, and The Boogans definitely was one that I hated, and then after seeing it on film, I was like, oh, yeah, this movie's fun. This movie works.
Oh, absolutely. I think, I had that experience at Hudson Horror as well. I think with, most notably with Eaten Alive, the Tobe Hooper.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That was a film I just did not... For years, I just did not get. I don't know why. I think it's because structurally it's so weird. There's not really, like, a main character to follow. It does a lot of weird things that don't necessarily work or shouldn't work. And I think finally seeing it in that sort of grindhouse environment really sold me on that movie.
Gotcha. Yeah. No, that's that makes total sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing like seeing these movies, on the big screen.
Yeah, it's...
Sitting with an audience, of a packed crowd, and we definitely try, and I'm sure Joel has told you, we tell people, do not talk, do not text, do not yell at the screen. This is, we like to keep it as you know, what's the word I'm looking for, Joel? You know, we want it to be as pure of an experience as possible.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's the thing. Like, it's with an audience that's already sort of inclined to be respectful, that's inclined to like these films. Like, you know, what I love about it is that everyone's really engaged in the films. They're laughing. They're like clearly responding, but they're not like trying to make them. They're not talking or trying to make themselves like, you know, the center. It's not like an audience participation thing like Rocky Horror,
right,
where the audience sort of gets, tries to make itself the story sometimes.
Exactly what we're striving for sure. You know, it is ultimately it's about the movies. Yeah, we don't want anybody to be disruptive or anything like that, because you know there's always somebody. You know, if you've seen Nightmare on Elm Street 100 times, that's great. But there's somebody in that audience that's never seen it, and it's such a great movie. You know, let's not ruin the experience for them.
Right, and so you know, personally, Chris, I appreciate the efforts that you go into here with this show, because with the 35mm being a format that most would consider outdated, as you know, we're in the digital age now. This is history, man. This is movie history here that you're running on the show, and I think anyone who considers themselves a cinephile needs to at least see, you know, a handful of films on 35mm before they die, because that's, you know, that's how it was for a long time. And so, yeah, you're doing some good work there, and you know, I'm just glad to have the opportunity to you know, to get you on and plug the show, because it's God's work is what you're doing, man.
Oh, well, thank you. Thanks so much. Yeah, I mean, we do the show because we're fans of horror and cult movies, and we're fans of presenting movies on 35mm, and for no other reason. I mean, if anybody thinks that you know, they can do something like this and they want to do it just to make money, they're crazy, because they're not going to make
yeah.
any money. You know, we just do it for the love of it. You know, and I've you know, met so many awesome people over the last 8 years, which is something I never anticipated, that, you know, there would be this whole, you know, community of people coming out to support our shows and to, you know, to watch these films together. So it's been an awesome experience for sure.
All right. Well, let's give you another chance to plug away there, Chris. So the Hudson Horror Show, when?
Yep. It is Saturday, December 16th. That is at the Empire South Hills 8 in Poughkeepsie, New York. We've got the six movies on tap, all off 35mm film. Halloween 4, Blackula, Savage Streets, The Buggins, Prison, and a mystery movie. We have trailers before each movie. We have loads of vendors selling DVDs and Blu-rays and T-shirts and everything else. Advanced tickets are just $38, and they are available at www.hudsonhorror.com. We show the day of the show. The festival will be running in two different theaters, theater room number 1 and theater room number 6. So you have to pick which room you want to go in. And theater 6, I think there's like 2 tickets left. And theater 1, there's quite a few tickets left. So, you know, definitely check out the website. It has trailers and everything else. And if there's any questions, somebody can email me at chris@hudsonhorror.com, and I'd be happy to get back to you.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you for your time, Chris. Glad we could have you on the show. And for future shows, we may reach out to you again, man, to plug a future show.
That would be awesome. Thank you so much, Chris and Joel, for having me on. And yeah, hopefully you'll be up here one of these days, Chris, out in New York to catch one of the shows in person.
I gotta make it a point, man. I have to book the hotel room, and I have to get the rental car, and I have to buy the plane ticket, and I gotta get to one of these things, man, before something goes wrong.
Yeah, you never say never. I mean, we're doing this show, and we're gonna see what happens. I don't exactly know for the future what we're gonna do, but we're doing this show, and yeah, fingers are crossed for the future.
Right. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it, man. Good job.
Thank you guys so much.
All right.
Yeah,
all right.
Thanks,
we'll
Chris.
See you, man.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
All right, Joel. Very good stuff. And, you're just a lucky son of a bitch, man, to get to go to see this thing.
Then being in the Northeast does have certain advantages. There's archival and repertory film culture here that's surpassed maybe by Los Angeles, and that's about it. It is kind of a lucky thing to be up here and to have those opportunities, and also to be part of a community that's really tight knit and puts these shows together, supports each other. Now, of course, Chris mentioned he was inspired kind of by Exhumed film screenings in Philadelphia, and I've been to those. Those are great. I mean, there's multiple drivings around here, the Mahoning in Pennsylvania. There's drivings in New York State and Coxsackie that do film screens. There's the Palace Theater in Syracuse. That's even beyond going to all the art house cinemas available in New York City and elsewhere, museum attached cinemas. There's a lot of options here. It is an embarrassment of riches, and it's also like one where I'm never sure how long it's going to last, because like we were talking about with Chris, the availability of 35mm prints. These prints are more and more of them disappear. Even though people find stuff every year at Zoom Films, has been really awesome finding film prints that had never been seen before or haven't been seen since their original runs. These things are fragile. They get damaged. They disappear. They're mostly in the hands of private collectors, except for I will say that Universal is awesome about striking new film prints of their old movies and touring them around. Universal is really cool about that. It's one where I'm determined to enjoy myself as much as possible now, because I don't know how long this era is going to last.
And so, it's sad what's happened to, like, what Chris was saying about the 35mm projectors being literally destroyed intentionally. It's a shame to see that, because, this was, It's cinema history. It's something that needs to be preserved rather than destroyed. And I really think that what Chris and his crew do, a few times a year is it's amazing, and it's something that needs to be savored and enjoyed by everybody.
Oh yeah, I mean it's given me some of the best like days I've ever had going to the movies, some of the most fun I've ever had, and that kind of thing. It is rare and it is special, and film studios are very intent on, and understandably so, I guess, very intent on sort of, once they've settled on the way they're going to make money, destroying all the other alternatives to that way they're going to make money. And it's easier for them to just do digital prints or digital projections from DVD-Rs or whatever, which is fine. I understand that, but big studios like to purposely cut off the alternatives, so you only have one way of getting things, and it's the way that gets them the most money. And it's like, we should be in an era where everything's available to us because there are so many venues to watch things now, but it's just because of the way copyrights work and because of the way studios make money off streaming or off home formats, less and less is available to us in an accessible fashion each year, and it's only going to get worse because most of our streaming sites are sort of content producers first and archives second,
right.
Almost.
Yeah. And so, with that said, Joel, I think that will conclude another excellent edition of Go Home in the Box. Thank you to Chris Allo for joining us, and we'll hope to have him on again sometime in the future for another one of his shows. For Joel LaPuma, I'm Chris Jordan. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll see you next time.
And I hope I see some of you at the Hudson Horror Show. Just look for Joel. I'm not hard to spot.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you.